And we'll move to our last case this morning, which is Thomas v. Colvin, case number... Mr. Hike, you were appointed by the court. You have the thanks of the court for your representation of your client. And that brings up Thomas v. Colvin, case number 12-3354.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Barry Schultz on behalf of the plaintiff, Pamela Thomas. In this case, the administrative law judge made several errors which require reversal and remand of the case. The ALJ's residual functional capacity finding was not supported by substantial evidence of record because the ALJ relied on the opinion of a state agency doctor whose opinion was issued in February of 2006. In September of 2007, Ms. Thomas had an updated MRI of her lumbar spine, which showed significant worsening of her condition. Spinal stenosis went from moderate to severe. There had been an indentation into the thecal sac. Now the herniated disc was noted to actually be abutting the nerve root and other additional findings. Based on those findings, Ms. Thomas underwent significant back surgery in September of 2007. Her testimony was that there was no improvement following the surgery. And unfortunately for Ms. Thomas, she was unable to get any follow-up treatment because she had no insurance and she had no money. She got some medical treatment at the Will Grundy County Clinic, but they refused to treat her for her back problem because she had had surgery elsewhere. The only evidence following the surgery was from 2008, and that's a one page from Provena St. Joseph Medical Center showing the claimant was still given significant pain medication, Soma and Vicodin. But the ALJ did not discuss how he determined that the claimant's functional capacity continued to be the same as it was in February of 2006, despite the significant worsening of her condition and surgery, which, at least based on the record before him, was unsuccessful. The plaintiff believes that the ALJ had a duty to develop the record in this case, get some type of medical evaluation to determine whether Ms. Thomas's testimony as to her limitations in standing and walking, need to lie down, etc., was actually supported.
Actually, I think the most serious issue here involves her need for a cane, which predated and postdated the surgery, as I understand the medical records here.
That's right. There's the prescription from 2003, actually, or it's a statement that the doctor was prescribing the cane in his treatment notes. So that was Dr. Feldman. That was in 2003. And the plaintiff does agree, Your Honor, that there is significant evidence in this case of the fact that Ms. Thomas needed a cane for balance and for walking.
And it's my understanding of the vocational expert's opinion that once that is factored into the mix, then her job opportunities evaporate.
Well, almost correct. The vocational expert said that all jobs at the light exertional level would be eliminated. And in this case, because Ms. Thomas was turned 50 in December of 2005, under the medical vocational guidelines, she would have to be found disabled if limited to sedentary work. So for the period prior to her 50th birthday, the cane use would not eliminate all jobs.
Okay, but she'd qualify post-50.
That's correct.
Did the cane prescription continue post-surgery?
There's no testimony about that. The claimant wasn't asked. She still used the cane. She testified to that, but there was no evidence one way or another.
And medical professionals observed her with the cane.
That's
surgery.
Correct. In fact, I believe every doctor that she saw observed her with the cane. She had the cane at the hearing. The Social Security field office employee who interviewed her noted that she used the cane. The Social Security consultative examiner, Dr. Ezeke, observed that without the cane, the claimant had an antalgic gait, meaning a gait that tried to accommodate her pain and lessen the pain. And he noted that she used the cane for support and balance. So there's actually quite a bit of evidence in this case that the claimant needed the cane. The ALJ noted Dr. Ezeke's observations, but then he doesn't make an analysis one way or another as to whether or not he was rejecting that finding, and if he was rejecting it, why?
I thought there was also an evidence of a history of falls without the cane.
That's correct. I believe I actually counted six falls that the claimant had, both in the house and a couple of times on ice. Now, she broke her toe during one of those falls, and she had testified that her balance was very poor. The ALJ does not mention any of that evidence or analyze.
Did she fall with or without the cane? Does that matter?
I don't know that it matters because the testimony was that she had significant balance problems, but I don't recall that the evidence established whether she was using the cane or not during
those falls. The thing I'm not familiar with, but apparently if you fall in below 50 and you descend to sedentary, which is the fifth level, whatever we call that, the job nobody wants, I guess, that they're saying this is automatic if she needs an assisted device and over 50, and the vocational expert says that's all she can do are these limited sedentary jobs.
That's correct. The commissioner has what they call, known as the grid, but it's the medical vocational guidelines. And for people who are between 50 and 54 years of age who cannot perform their past relevant work and are limited to unskilled work, if the most exertional job they could do is sedentary, they must be found disabled under those guidelines.
Well, that's positive then.
It would be dispositive if the ALJ had found that she needed to use a cane. That's correct.
She had other problems, you claim, with methyl and various and sundry other things that I suppose are cumulative. This one seems to be the pivotal one.
That's correct. In this case, it is, Your Honor. I also just briefly wanted to talk about the ALJ's credibility finding in this case. Generally, it's found at page 69 of the administrative record. And the ALJ makes a lot of conclusory statements that are completely unsupported in his decision and in the record. The ALJ says that the record does not reflect that the claimant received the type of treatment that would be expected for a person with her alleged symptoms. But that, in the Martinez case, this court called that kind of finding suspended in air because the ALJ doesn't tie that to the evidence in any way. This claimant had underwent major back surgery because of significant findings on an MRI, and so it's really unclear what type of treatment the ALJ thinks the claimant should have had given her alleged symptoms. In addition, the ALJ says, but for her surgery, her treatment is best described as conservative. But that statement really is saying, but for the treatment that's not conservative, her treatment was conservative, which of course is true, but isn't a basis for finding the claimant not credible.
We're saying that the conservative treatment is dictated because there's no money to do what is needed and further surgery?
Well, and that's correct. The ALJ doesn't make it clear if he's talking about the pre-surgery treatment or a post-surgery treatment. Certainly post-surgery, the claimant just had no means to get any additional treatment. And pre-surgery, she had conservative treatment, which included multiple pain medications and physical therapy, which didn't work, and then she ended up needing to have the surgery. Finally, the ALJ also finds that the objective evidence only showed minimal findings. But in reaching that conclusion, the ALJ does not explain how the MRI from September of 2007, showing severe spinal stenosis and herniated disc abutting the nerve root requiring surgery, is a minimal finding.
Well, I think even before that, it seemed to me there were more than minimal findings. She was in a very serious car accident and sustained substantial injury and only achieved very limited recovery.
That's correct. I mean, even the first MRI showed that there was a herniated disc and that it was indenting the thecal sac and the claimant had moderate spinal stenosis.
That's pretty serious.
I believe it is. And her treating doctor, Dr. Feldman, his treatment notes consistently show that the claimant complained of pain and had difficulty walking, and he kept changing her pain medications, but to no avail. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Jadri.
Good morning. I'm Jared Jadri, representing the commissioner. This court should affirm the district court's decision because substantial evidence supported the ALJ's determination that Thomas was not disabled. Now, Now, Thomas makes one point that is correct in this one limited issue, that if she were found to be restricted to a range of sedentary work, that the medical vocational guidelines would direct a finding of disability as of her 50th birthday in December of 2005. However, substantial evidence supports the ALJ's finding that Thomas was capable of performing a limited range of light unskilled work.
Yeah, but that all turns on this issue of the cane, right?
That's correct.
And the opinion doesn't really address that.
The ALJ does address the issue of Thomas's alleged need for a cane. The ALJ discusses Dr. Azik's February 2006 examination, findings and observations, and explicitly addresses and talks about the fact that Thomas walked, used a cane for support and confidence.
That's why you use a cane.
Right. What the distinction
what more
here
needs
is
to be said by the doctor.
Well, the Dr. Azik doesn't offer an opinion as to the related functional limitations that would stem from her problems. Dr. Belinsky, reviewing the record, including Dr. Azik's examination report, does offer such an opinion. Dr. Belinsky looks at and addresses the findings and observations found in the record, including Dr. Azik's observations, and opined that Thomas was capable of performing a limited range of light work without the need for a cane. There's a difference between whether someone prefers a cane and whether someone requires a cane in order to perform a certain degree of work.
Well, what about the falls then? How does that play into this need for a cane, or whether it's just a backup?
Thomas's counsel, I think, just said that he counted six falls over the course of what amounts to a six-year period under review. Because someone
Belinsky
fell down six times in 6 years, that isn't I think it's important to evaluate that plus the back surgery and other things in terms of the context of what we're looking at here. Is her allegation that she is disabled, that she is incapable of performing any work activity. So it may be, problematic that, the ALJ finds that she has back problems and that she does have significant exertional limitations stemming from her condition. He restricts her to a limited range of light work. That's a really serious restriction. What he's finding, however, is that her impairments don't rise to the level of disability. And I think that's the important distinction. In terms of the back surgery that Thomas mentions, the ALJ is not saying that, back surgery isn't significant. When you're talking about her treatment history, what he's looking at is Thomas is claiming that as of January 2002, she was disabled. She was unable of performing any work. And that over this six-year period of time, what we see in terms of her treatment, which primarily consists of checkups and getting some x-rays and MRIs, isn't commensurate with what you'd expect to see from someone who, starting in January 2002, was disabled. And simply because she had back surgery 5 years after she allegedly became disabled didn't materially change that calculus.
Well, a laminectomy is typically only done as a last resort. And the standard course of treatment would be a conservative one, treating with medication and physical therapy and whatnot, at least as a first try to solve the problem. And she was in rehab from the accident for a while. And so surgery 5 years after the accident is not unusual, is it?
No, it's not unusual, but it doesn't demonstrate that, well, clearly now she's disabled because she had back surgery. For one thing, the back surgery is intended to alleviate her condition, not make it worse. There's no allegation that she became more functionally limited as a result of or following that surgery.
It's my understanding the allegation is the back surgery didn't bring relief, and that's also not unusual.
Well, the back surgery went ahead without complication, and at the hearing, the only thing that Thomas said is that the physician told her that she could only lift, I think, 5 pounds. That's not nowhere in the physician's actual records. It's important to look at that. There's no real context for that. Only lift 5 pounds for the next week, for the next month, the next year. And And her claim primarily is focused, as you pointed out, on standing and walking and the use of the cane. Right. She's not challenging her lifting or her carrying or pushing
right.
requirements.
Well, let's get to that part of the claim because that is the heart of the claim here. If the finding of light work capacity really depends upon this issue of whether she needs a cane or doesn't need a cane, and that was given short shrift by the ALJ, it seems to me, based on the record, which is pretty universal that she needed the cane. Whether it was prescribed for her or not, everybody is consistent that she needed the cane. The only one who isn't is Belinsky, but he's just reviewing the record. He's not examining her. And that was pre-surgery.
Well,
but all the other record evidence is consistent that she needed to use the cane. That would eliminate the light work capability after the age of 50. She'd only be eligible for sedentary work, and that equals a disability determination.
Right. Respectfully, I disagree that the ALJ gives short shrift to the issue of the cane, and also that all these physicians opined that she required a cane in order to provide a certain exertional level of work. Dr. Azik doesn't offer an opinion concerning what Thomas can or cannot do with or without a cane. He says his observation is she can walk, greater than 50 feet without a cane. She walks with a slight limp, and she uses a cane for support and confidence. But as the district court found, the record, there's very little medical evidence, in fact, supporting the claim that she required rather than preferred the use of a cane. Dr. Belinsky reviewed the record.
There is a prescription for the cane.
There's a prescription in Dr. Feldman's Dr. Feldman's March 2003 treatment notes. There's a notation indicating a cane prescription.
So that would show a need.
Well, again, that cane prescription doesn't really indicate the circumstances or the context for an apparent need for a cane. For example, is it only over long distances? Does it matter the terrain, et cetera? And it's worth noting that at the administrative hearing, Thomas testified that she didn't start using a cane for another year. So although there may have been a cane prescription in March 2003, she testified she started using a cane sometime in 2004 and didn't testify. There's no indication that anyone had prescribed a cane at any point subsequent to that. So although there are observations that she used a cane, the issue here is, does she require a cane in order to perform a limited range of light work?
What's the totality of the ALJ's disposition of the cane issue?
The ALJ discusses the findings and observations. Well, the ALJ discusses Thomas's allegation of that she needed a cane, discusses and addresses the observations and findings of Dr. Azik, and then the opinion of Dr. Belinsky concerning her alleged need for a cane. This is not a situation where the ALJ, we're concerned that the ALJ, ignored an entire line of evidence. He was well aware of this allegation. At the administrative hearing, there were questions being raised about the use of a cane and what impact that would have on her occupational base. So there's no concern here that the ALJ missed something. What we really have is a disagreement over how the ALJ weighed the evidence of a cane. And as this court has held, simply having a disagreement over the weight of the factual evidence is not a sufficient basis for reversing the ALJ's decision to credit one version of events, one version of it over the other.
So the treatment of this issue really is just a part of the background recitation of the facts of the case?
Well, this court has held that the ALJ's doesn't have to have a function-by-function analysis, that, in fact, the narrative discussion of the allegations and of the medical opinion evidence is sufficient. And just last year, I believe it was in Tripp, this court found that the ALJ, basically an implicit rejection of the alleged need for a cane, where the ALJ discussed, physician observations that the claimant used a cane, et cetera, and didn't include a cane restriction in the actual functional capacity finding.
So there is light work one can do without the need for the cane?
Yes.
And then the vocational expert said that?
Yes. So the vocational expert testified that someone with Thomas's vocational background and functional capacity with a limitation to light, unskilled work without the need for a cane could perform a significant number of jobs that exist in the regional economy.
But that would require, I think I recall 6 hours of being able to stand and walk.
Right, and Dr. Belinsky and Dr. Vincent, who both reviewed the record, found that Kane wasn't required for her to do that. And as this court has held time and time again, the ALJ is entitled to rely on, you know, those physicians' opinions precisely because they are experts in Social Security disability evaluation and that their opinions provide substantial evidence for the ALJ's decision.
Okay, so that's what it comes down to then. She can do jobs light, described as light. There are a number of those jobs, and those jobs could require at least having to stand on her feet and walk for 6 hours.
That's correct.
Unassisted.
Without the requirement of an assistive device. It's worth noting that those jobs also, the ALJ's functional capacity finding limited, you know, those jobs also require no more than frequent balancing, and actually the requirements of the jobs that were identified don't include any balancing, stooping, crawling, etc.
And that, of course, takes into consideration all our other problems.
Absolutely. I see my time is up. Just ask the court affirm the district court's decision. Thank you.
Mr. Schultz, you've got a minute left.
I believe the ALJ mentioned the cane use only once, and that's at page 68, where he mentions Dr. Zeke's observations. He actually doesn't mention the claimant's testimony, and he doesn't mention any of the other evidence. While the ALJ does not have to discuss every piece of evidence, I believe this Court has held that the ALJ must discuss significant evidence, and where you have a outcome-determinative issue, the ALJ should have to evaluate that. Social Security ruling 96-8P says that in the narrative discussion of a decision, the ALJ must explain why he accepts or rejects all alleged limits of a claimant. The claimant said she needs the cane. There's substantial evidence of it, and the ALJ does not analyze that, and the case should be reversed on that basis. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court is in recess until next month.